Please turn now in the Bible to Ecclesiastes at chapter 11. Ecclesiastes at chapter 11. You can find that in your pew Bible on page 559. Ecclesiastes 11 is on page 559. We've been walking straight through the book of Ecclesiastes. We're coming towards the end of it now. So if you turn for home on page 559, I'm going to read all of chapter 11. Please give your attention to the Word of God. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a portion to seven, or even to eight, for you know not what disaster may happen on earth. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves on the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it will lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the way the spirit comes to the bones in the womb of a woman with child, so you do not know the work of God, who makes everything. In the morning, sow your seed. And at evening, withhold not your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So if a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. Remove vexation from your heart and put away pain from your body. For youth and the dawn of life are vanity. You know, we've read through three different passages of the Bible this morning. Plus, what we're singing comes from another part of the Bible. And so I hope you've caught on that the Bible is quite a book, a big and diverse book. We began with the commandments of God. Everybody knows that those are in the Bible. But then we went to Jesus telling a parable that was somewhat enigmatic. And now we have what we call wisdom literature right in the middle of the Bible. God knows we need different kinds of things. And so he gives it to us here. He gives us gospel, he gives us commandments, he gives us lament, and he gives us wisdom right here. Now this section focuses on what we don't know. You know, he really drives it home to us. There's a lot you don't know. Verse 2, you don't know what disaster is going to happen. Thanks, but that's true. Or verse 5, you don't know the way the spirit comes to the bones of the unborn child. True enough, don't know. Or verse 6, you don't know if it's better to sow in the morning or in the evening. Or to really drive it home in verse 5, you don't know the work of God. You say, that's true. Yes, and God made everything. Which leaves us knowing pretty much nothing, right? The question is, how do you act when you don't know something? And the answer has to be, it depends on what we're talking about. If you are hunting, I've never been hunting, but I understand this is the rule. If you're out there with your rifle and there's something moving in that bush, you may not pull the trigger until you've made sure that it is a deer and not another hunter. In that case, your ignorance means that you may not act. However, young man, does she like you? I don't know. All right, so what do you derive from that? Well, I guess I shouldn't do anything. Oh, that'll win her heart. You see, depending on what we're talking about, your ignorance may mean don't ask, or your ignorance may mean act. It's the only way you're going to find out, or the only way you can shape the situation. Or perhaps you just don't get to know in advance, and you have to act blindly. There are two strikes. You are up to bat. The pitch is coming in. Looks like a pretty good pitch, but it could be a curveball. Well, I guess I won't. I'm not going to swing until I know if it's a curveball. Strike three. You don't get to wait till you're certain. You have to swing the bat. So while there are conditions in which ignorance means don't act, sometimes ignorance is simply a lame excuse not to act. Sometimes you have to go ahead and pull the trigger. And so while he said back in chapter 9, verse 11, time and chance happen to all. To say there's a time for everything means that this might be the right time. And it might be the wrong time. And you don't know. But very often, the right thing to do is to get on with it. This chapter says, there's a lot you don't know. So get on with living the bold, generous life that God commands. A lot you don't know. So get on with living the bold, generous life that God commands. We've gotten to the point now where he's giving mostly positive instruction. He's dragged us through a lot of negativity, a lot of vanity he talks about in this book. And he's not taking any of it back. But having made us see the worst, now he says, okay, once we've stripped away your illusions, now let's talk about how to actually positively live. So he says, verse 1, cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. It's hard to know what he's talking about, but he clearly means be generous. Perhaps he's talking about farming. The Nile was not far away, and the Nile would flood, and then as it receded, it would leave all this fertile dirt behind, and you would cast your seed into just a little bit of water as most of it's receded. And farming is always a risky thing. We have no feel for this now. But farmers through centuries, I mean, their food is running out, and they could eat this seed. Or they could plant this seed. And so, are you going to plant it or are you going to eat it? Well, you have to plant it or you won't have a harvest. You have to go ahead and plant it. And yet it's a hard thing to say, I'm going to be hungry now for a while, and I don't know that I'm going to get a harvest. Cast your seed upon the waters. You need to go on and plant. Now, we could be talking about charity. You know, if you help your neighbor across the street, can I have free eggs? Sure. Right? We all feel fine about that, because presumably next week we can ask him for sugar. But if somebody is passing through and we're never going to see him again, we might feel differently about loaning him something. It's not a loan, it's a gift. The charity that we give will not be returned by this person that we won't see again. Should you do it? Cast your bread upon the waters. Because he gives you a promise. You will find it again after many days. On what basis can he make that promise? Well, in Proverbs, we have it. The reason laid out for us. There it says, give to the poor, for whoever gives to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him. So whoever lends to the poor, whoever gives to the poor lends to the Lord, and the Lord will repay him. In other words, don't withhold your hand from giving to that person that you won't see again. God sees it. And he will repay you. In his own time and in his own way. You will not be the loser from that generosity. Now maybe he means trade. The word translated cast is normally translated send. You say, go ahead, send your bread out. Go send it off across the waters in trade. For after many days, perhaps the ship will come back, giving you a great profit. In every case, whatever he's thinking of, in every case, the point comes down to kind of the same thing. Don't live afraid, clutching your precious things to your chest. Be bold and be hopeful and be generous. And again, this is the same guy who says everything is vanity. Once you face the worst, again, his point was, if there's no God, if there's just life under the sun, then this world is not enough. It's vain. But now, towards the end of the book, he's saying, of course, there is a God. And since there is a God, this is how to live in his world. You live for him, for his eyes. He will repay you. He goes on in verse 2. Give a portion to seven, even eight. You know not what disaster may fall on the earth. Instead of a promise here, now we get a warning. Disasters happen. You say, true enough. How do you live in a world in which disasters happen? You know, I've always liked the Philadelphia area because I like to say that we don't get disasters here much. I mean, by the time we get a hurricane, it's normally just a bunch of wind and rain. Earthquakes are like once a generation, and you just watch that thing go back and forth for a second. You know, we don't have forest fires around here. You know, this is great. All right? And then we just got a hurricane, didn't we? With some tornadoes at Fort Washington, right? Yeah, that was a real disaster. That's really messed up over there. How do you live in a world that does have disasters, even in Philadelphia? Well, some people might say, I'm staying in the basement. Some people might say, I'm not giving anything to anybody. I don't know what I'm going to need, so I need to hoard it. He says, wrong. Since disasters happen, you better give a portion to seven or to eight. Now, how does that work? Well, again, maybe he's talking about investments. Don't put all your money into Apple stock, because for all you know, Apple's about to take a tumble. Diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Give a portion to seven or eight, because you don't know what disaster is going to take out a couple of them. But he might also still be on charity. Give a portion to seven or eight different people, because you don't know what disaster is going to wipe you out and leave you needing help from them. Now, the thing is, based on that proverb that we just said, whoever gives to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will repay him. That does make charity into a sort of investment. And I don't think I'm being impious in saying that. I think Jesus said that in what we read. He said, when you give a feast, invite the people who can't give you a feast back, and you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. You think, be charitable now for the sake of the reward God will give you. You think your charity is a type of investment once you put God into the picture. And Jesus says it much more sharply in Luke 16. We could have read a different story. He ends up with this. Make friends for yourself by means of unrighteous money so that when it fails, they may receive you into the eternal dwelling. A difficult enigmatic parable there in Luke 16. But Jesus is saying, don't make money an end in itself. Make sure that money is a tool that you use for bigger and other greater ends, such as charity and friendship. Be generous. Disasters happen. That might seem counterintuitive to say, disasters happen, be generous. So he gives examples in verse 3. When the clouds are full of rain, they give it up. They give us rain, and the whole earth profits from it. So if you're full of rain, give it up and be generous with it. Let your what you have shower down and be a blessing to others. Let me give an example of a disaster. Wherever a tree falls, it's going to stay there. They didn't have chainsaws. Right. Axes are kind of rare and precious for them. All right, this is going to lay there. And the Bible often compares people to trees. Psalm 1, blessed is the man, he is like a tree planted by streams of water. So it's conveying here not just that disasters come, like trees falling on your house, but also that there's a certain finality, both to where the tree goes down and to where the man goes down. It's appointed to us once to die, and then comes the judgment. When the tree falls, there it lies. So we need to ask ourselves, which way are we leaning now? And do we have peace with God? Life is uncertain. Don't let that paralyze you. Instead, act in the right settings. Be bold. Be generous. In the beginning of verse 4, he says, and be diligent. Whoever observes the wind will not sow. Whoever regards the clouds will not reap. In other words, if you're just saying, I don't know if this is the right day to go farming, All right, well, then you probably won't go today. And tomorrow you might say, I don't know if this is the right day to go farming. And then you won't go tomorrow. And before you know it, the season's over. I spent a summer painting with Durin. If the forecast said 100% chance of rain all day, we didn't go paint. We figured they knew what they were talking about when they get up 100%. But you know, there's a lot more days when the forecast says 50% chance of rain today. I'm talking about exterior house painting. You can't paint in the rain. Do you go if it's 50% chance of rain? Well, you have to. You can have whole weeks go by with 50% chance of rain. 50% chance of rain, go start painting. You might have to pack up after an hour. But if you sit at home saying there's some rain in the forecast, you're not going to get done your jobs this summer. Work cannot wait until you are certain. You need to just get to work. Taking care of your family can't wait until you're certain. Starting a family cannot wait until you're certain. Proposing cannot wait until you're certain. Unless, in that case, you didn't aren't the one who proposed. Speaking the gospel can't wait till you're certain. There's so much of life where you can't wait till you're certain. Your uncertainty, thus, don't make an excuse for laziness. You don't know, so you better start now. I don't know, so this might be the perfect time. But I want to know if it's the right time. You want to know the future then. Knowing it's the right time requires that you know the consequences of it, means that you have to know the future, and we don't know the future. God knows all things, and we don't know the work of God who makes everything. He gives us an illustration. Do you know how the Spirit comes to the bones? And I was marveling at what a good example this is. There's times you read ancient authors, and they talk about something that we don't know, like whether you're the Father. All right? And you're like, ah, modern technology, you can find out if you're the Father. All right? That's Augustine's example. All right? But this scriptural example? Yeah, we know so much more about how the baby grows in the womb. Granted. Do you know how the Spirit comes to those bones? You say, I want to phrase it again in a more scientific fashion. Fine. Do you know how consciousness comes to that brain? Do you know when consciousness comes to that little embryonic brain? No. Okay, it's a great example. You do not know how this happens. That you begin with a couple cells and you end up with a knowing, speaking, walking human being. It's amazing. How do you don't know how the Spirit comes to the bones. Consciousness remains a mystery. I'm reinterpreting Spirit as consciousness close enough. And of course, then we don't know the work of God. You basically know nothing. But he says, something you do know. You know God. And you know God's good. And you know he commands you to get to work. So don't let your ignorance stop you from acting. You know God. You know God said get to work, so get to work. Might be the right time, might not be the right time. But you need to get started. Because you don't know. And you're not going to. So he goes on in verse 6. In the morning sow your seed. And at evening, withhold not your hand from sowing your seed. For you don't know which will prosper, this or that or both. What's the right time to work? Any plausible time. He didn't say midnight. He didn't say the Sabbath. He said morning and evening. Because you can sow in the morning and you can sow in the evening. It's a hot place. He didn't mention noon. But it's not too hot. You could. Work at any plausible time. Since you don't know. And I'm reminded, I took a class once on how to start a new church. The lingo is church planting. Right? And the guy who was teaching it said, nothing works, so try everything. And that was not meant as a counsel of despair. Often we say, if nothing works, I'm just going to play a video game. But no, that wasn't the point. Nothing works, so try everything. And if you're trying everything, God will probably build his church. And you won't exactly know whether it was this or that that you did, and maybe the point is none of what you did, but God built his church. And that's really how to live. Right? You don't know, so try everything. You don't know, so get to work. Life is an adventure. Go out and enjoy the adventure. So he says, there's a lot you don't know. So be generous, be diligent, goes on to verse 7, live joyfully. Light is sweet. It is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. And it's interesting to compare that to chapter 1. In chapter 1, he looked out at nature and said, it's such a weariness. The sun also rises and runs overhead and runs back to where it started. All the rivers go into the sea and the sea is never full. The wind goes around and around and around and we don't understand it. In chapter 1, he looks at nature and he says it's a weariness. But that was because he was looking at it, taking God out of the picture. If this world is all there is, it's not enough. But now he's looking at it in the light of God. Since, he goes on to say, God will bring you into judgment, that's to say there's a future. That's to say we're going somewhere. That's to say this world is not all there is. And if we can just say it's not all there is, then we can enjoy it for the good that's in it. I just read a great book on choice, The Paradox of Choice, very insightful. And he talks about expectations and how expectations can mess up your enjoyment of your choice. Like you go to a restaurant and it's pretty good food, but if you expected it to be great, you're disappointed. Well, again, if you look out at the world and your expectations are, I have to get everything in this life now. Well, then everything is vanity. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity, because you won't have that eternity that's in your heart satisfied now. Cast your expectations onto the Lord and enjoy the good things of this life as they come. It's not all that you have to look forward to. So go see the sun, he says, while you can. Verse 8. If a person lives many years, let him rejoice in them all. But let him remember that the days of darkness will be many. I went to visit a very old man this week. He said, when I was young, I looked forward to being old and doing things. But now I can't get myself out of bed. I said, oh, that's sad. Yes, there's still Ecclesiastes. He doesn't let us forget the hard stuff. Rejoice in your life. I think he was trying still. But he was acknowledging that it's hard. He's not enjoying the old age that he expected. He's had a long old age. He's very old. Now he can't get himself out of bed. And so what we see here in Ecclesiastes is not a cheap joy. It's not a forget tomorrow and just enjoy yourself today. It's not a let's pretend joy. It's more of a determined joy. Life is hard, and it may well get harder. Now, let us rejoice in what God has given us. That's a much more sober and therefore more lasting, more real call to joy than simply, be happy, don't worry. He's saying, act generously, work hard, live joyfully, and live for God. Some commentators say verse 9 is the climax of the whole book. Rejoice, young man, in your youth. Let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these things, God will bring you into judgment. In other words, he's saying, life is a gift. Strength is a gift while you have it. Health is a gift while you have it. The earth is a gift while we have it. Rejoice in your gifts. Live boldly. Young person, you see some good thing, go for it. Remember that God is God. To say go for it is not to say that you are your own God. You're never God. You're not God now, you won't be God later. So he doesn't mean do whatever. We understand this. When he says the ways of your heart, you better purify that heart first. Because God will bring everything into judgment. One commentator, Kidner, said, we're told here that joy was created to dance with goodness. Joy was not created to dance alone. I like that. Summing up verse 9, joy is created to dance with goodness and not alone. If you would have joy, walk before God's face. Walk in the hope of the resurrection. Walk enjoying this world because it's not all there is. You can better enjoy this world if you know it's not everything. If you think it is everything, you're disappointed because it's not enough for the human soul. God has put eternity in our hearts. Yet so we do not know what God is doing. So we have verse 10. Remove vexation from your heart, and sin vexes you. To have a good conscience, what a peace that is. How much better it is to remove that sin, that vexation from you, and to lie down at night in peace. So the sum here is to live for God. And how are you going to do that? Everything we said so far. Live boldly in your ignorance. Be generous, be diligent, live joyfully. Walk before God. And believe what He says. He is not silent. He has said some things, and we have them here. And that's what it means to live by His promises, to take hold of those promises and say, I believe that God is good and that I can take this step in my ignorance because God is good and He commands me to move. I don't know if it's going to work or not, but I can live at peace in God's world as I act, doing what He calls me to do. I can move forward. There's many choices in life. And we'd like to have perfect information before we act, but we don't get it. Don't be paralyzed. There's a lot you don't know. So be bold. Be diligent, be generous, and walk joyfully before God, to whom be the glory and the praise and the honor forevermore.